Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nacre Nibling. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero G Draft Strategy. And in this podcast, Blake and I are going to talk about the biggest hot shots and have nots of the last couple of weeks. Let's get it. And of course, I have your friend and my best friend, the man with whom I can never contend, Blake Creamer. How are we feeling tonight?
Yes, sir. Thank you, my man. It's good to be here. And I just love, like, first off, everybody, before the show here, Nate and I are basically, like, this is what I love about you, Nate. There's no one else I would rather sit here and go through fantasy hockey. Like, we're literally looking at the scoreboards talking about our matchups. That's the level of degenerates that we are in fantasy hockey. And honestly, buddy, you're the man, and I wouldn't want to do that with anybody else. So yeah, that all said, we're both, like, you know, biting our fingernails with our matchups here on Sunday. Like, everything hangs in the balance with these games. So yeah, you know, the end of the episode could be a happy ending or a sad ending. Let's go for the happy ending, right, Nate? Giggity.
Yes, I think everybody prefers happy endings. I've got... So we were both talking about a couple matchups. I got a barn burner. I'm literally 0.5 points up on my opponent right now. He's got Crosby left. Two more periods to go there. I've got one more period of Ryan Strome and Cam Fowler and two more periods of Chris Letang and Matthias Ekholm, and I do not feel confident. Like, on sheer volume, I should have him, but it's Crosby versus, yeah, not much more than streamers on my side. So, I'm going to be watching that. I do apologize if I just blank at some point. If that happens, it's probably because somebody has scored some points one way or the other. I know you're scoreboard watching too. Who was it? You got McDavid against you and Hyman. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, basically I'm up pretty big in my Kekuffel matchup, and in Kekuffel, I basically need to win out for any chance at the playoffs. Like, I've got, you know, second highest points for in the entire league. But yeah, I've taken some bad L's. So yeah, that all said, I've got, I'm leading him now, but he has Nuge, Hyman, McDavid. He picked up Calvin Picard as well. So the Edmonton game, yeah, that's really my fate right there. So I'm watching that closely. And, you know, if Pittsburgh can get it done, I'm getting the biz.
All right. Well, we should probably also get to biz here. We should hit it with some newsies. Let's talk about this Anaheim team playing as we speak. We had Mason McTavish out with a lower body injury. Lil Carlson still out with his upper body injury. No timeline on either yet. John Gibson came out of this. Well, he didn't go into the game, but he was out of the game with an illness as well. So, and then what was it? Terry went down the tunnel. Like, there's a few things happening in this game here for the Ducks. And yeah, it's just hard to be excited about anything going on. I was checking out the box score here, and Menchikov was leading all Anaheim defensemen in time on ice, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I stopped to think about it. I'm like, but who's he playing with right now? It's not great for anybody in Anaheim. Matt Zuccarello was out for the game today for personal reasons. Maybe that's why Minnesota barely squeaked out a last second victory over the San Jose Sharks here today. Kent Johnson out for the season with a torn labrum. Tough to see. Feels like a guy with a lot of potential, but just really hasn't been put in a position to succeed with the tire fire that Columbus has been for really the last couple of seasons now. Elvis Merzlikins, this one hurts. He's out with an upper body injury, and that's obviously going to probably affect his availability for any potential trades. So yeah, you'll have to watch that as well. Hopefully it's a short-term thing and he can get back to health and find his way to a team that will actually provide some defense in front of him. Evgeny Kuznetsov cleared from the Players Assistance Program, sent down to the AHL. This was the plan. Could be an option if and when he comes back. I don't know. It really depends. Does Evgeny Kuznetsov really want to play? It kind of seems like that's where things are at. Like, how badly does Kuznetsov want to be an NHL player? Clearly Yeah, no, nobody picked him up on waivers. Nobody wants to take on that contract. So it's really up to him what he wants to do from here on out. So I would wait to see when he comes back, wait to see where he goes in the lineup, wait to see if he's able to get any sort of normalcy going once again. But yeah, I have some hope. Obviously, Washington's got a good playoff schedule as well. So something to watch there. Brady Tkachuk missed his first game in a long time with an upper body injury. There was some conflicting reports. Seemed like he was going to be good to go on Saturday, and then he was pulled from the game. So watch that one as well. And then I don't know if anybody really cares about this sort of thing, but Elias Pettersson did sign an 8-year contract. I'll turn the mic over to you, Blake. Talk to me about your Pettersson love.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just common sense. This guy's a unit. I mean, he's going to probably get 100 points again this year. It's a great signing for the Canucks. I'm super stoked on it. And but it just draws, like, it makes me realize how horrible that the Canadian media can be. You know what I mean? Like, did they just make stories out of anything? Like, this whole thing became this huge ordeal about Pettersson not signing, and like, because some story was leaked about him talking with the, Carolina Hurricanes. Just let the people play and let them sort it out. Like, he always wanted to play here. He said that in the past, but it just became this big story that was, bigger than it should have been. So, I'm super happy this is done though, because I think that probably was looming a little bit over his play and the Canucks in general. So now that this is done, I think it's going to be arrows up for the Canucks. Book it.
All right. Well, we better get into some hot shots. At the top, as we do, we're going to touch on one star who's absolutely been lighting it up as of late, and it's Kucherov. I kind of thought, honestly, like, Kucherov obviously had a tremendous start, and I kind of thought there might be a point at which he, just ended up starting to take a little bit of a decline back towards more of his career norms. But nope, that is not in the cards for Nikita Kucherov. Skating 22 minutes a night on average on the season. And yeah, everything's just continues to come up. Nikita Kucherov, 10 points his last five games. He's actually skating closer to 23 minutes a night in the last five games here. Underlying numbers, he's never been like an absolutely crazy top of the line shots per 60 guy or individual scoring chances per 60 guy, but he's actually got the highest shots per 60 of his career this year, and the individual scoring chances for right in line with his career numbers. Shooting percentage right in line. IPP is pretty high, but he's done this before, so
Yep.
that feels pretty sustainable. Everything's like on the high side, but not like out of the realm of possibility for a superstar like this. So you do kind of feel like this might just be who Kucherov is. 50 goal, 139 point pace on the season. What do you think, Blake? Like, if you had to handicap it rest of the season, would you go under on that?
Under on the what?
139 points.
Oh God. Yeah, I think I'd go under 139, but not much.
Yeah.
Like, Cooch is, he's just a, yeah, he's an enigma. This guy's amazing. Like, 105 points in 62 games. I love this. There really isn't too much to say. This, besides, like, this guy's one of the best power play performers like ever. He's got 42 power play points already in 62 games. I love the ice time. Like, that would be a career high of ice time for him, right? Last year he was 20 minutes 08. Like, this year he's just under 22 minutes. That's huge, right? And they need him to be there. Like, you and I were talking a little bit offline, but Tampa, behind their top line there and top defensive pairing, they really don't have a lot going on, right? They don't got a lot of guys supporting Kucherov, right? So he's really having to do it on his own. But it's really neat to see at age 30, this guy's popping off for his highest shots and goal per 60 in his career. That's amazing. I love that he's, been able to stay healthy as well, because that's a weird narrative that Kucherov had, for a couple seasons there. And he played a full 82 last year, and he'll probably do it again this year. So, yeah, I love Kucherov. I'm a big fan. This guy was gotten at major value in draft season. And unfortunately, I think that this season is going to make it so that he's maybe drafted a little high, right? Because
Yeah.
I think, like you said, this is all kind of ceiling Kucherov stuff right now, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's not, we haven't seen him have this kind of shot totals, right? Shots and goal per 60. So I would assume that's kind of peak Kucherov, and that'll probably regress a little bit. But who cares? This guy's an amazing fantasy asset, and he should be, top six, top seven drafted
Easy.
next year. Yeah, no question.
All right, let's move over to Jonathan Marchessault, who's got 4 goals, 9 points in his last 5, skating just over 18 and a half minutes a night. On the season now, 43 goals, 71-point pace. He ranks 20th in the league in shots per 60 on the season, so that's up there. Individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, a little bit more modest, 78th in the league there. On-ice numbers are solid, but not terrific. On the season, he's skating, you know, a little bit less, 17:41 average time on ice there. The kind of interesting part for me about Marchessault is, yeah, the shooting percentage is higher. He's only had one other season where he's really approached this like 15% plus. Normally he's much more of a like 11 to 12% shooter, somewhere in that range. But this year he's up at 15.5%, and the on-ice shooting percentage is something that we really haven't seen from him. Typically he's been more in the 9 to 10% range, and this year he's up over 11%. So you got a couple of boosting metrics there, but really, like, theoretically he has more time on ice ceiling to give, as evidenced by this last 5-game stretch where he has gotten some more ice, extra minute or so there. So what's the prognosis moving forward on this 71-point pace? Do you think the extra ice time keeps up as Vegas pushes on towards playoffs? Obviously we've got some injuries there. You got Eichel hopefully coming back, but you got Mark Stone out. What's the overall take on Marchessault from this point onward?
Yeah, I think you said it. Like, I mean, with some of those injuries, especially Mark Stone, like Marchessault is going to be relied on a little bit more moving forward. I love the ice time. And I like, this is a player that, I mean, I think I've liked him for a couple of years. I've heard lots of people talk about him, but he's never really popped. And I was so happy to see when Vegas won last year, just the type of playoffs that this guy had and the recognition, because when you do something like that, when you win the Conn Smythe Trophy, you win the Stanley Cup, like I think that's a development piece for Marchessault. Like, I feel like he's a different player this year. He has a line that was really good for most of the year when Barbashev and Jack Eichel, right? And I think they'll probably get back to that when Eichel does come back. And I think Eichel's going to be coming back, you know, within maybe a week. So that's good news. So I think that's going to raise Marchessault's ceiling a little bit. Yeah, I think 71 points seems absolutely reasonable for this player. He does other things too, right? Like he's great in banger leagues. I think his power play total has a bit of room to grow as well, especially because he's getting a 68% power play share, which is the highest power play share he's ever had. Like, that was one of the things last season with Marchessault. I remember, like, yeah, it was 50-50. He was either on the top one or they were bumping him to the second one, and nothing was consistent. So he's a clear power play one option this year, and I think he has a little bit more to give on the power play. So I'm into it. I'm into 71 point Marchessault.
Nice. Yeah, let's move on. Let's talk some Gus Nyquist. So Nyquist has been a beneficiary of this recent 8-game win streak that the Nashville Predators have gone on out of absolutely nowhere. In the last 5 here, he's got 8 points, including 3 goals, averaging just 16 minutes through there, which is not as high as he has been at some points throughout the season. Like, on the season, he's averaging over 17.5. So realistically, this is kind of a low water mark for him. He's never really had great underlying numbers. They've actually been a little bit better of late, but a little bit better still means 206th in shots per 60. So definitely nothing too crazy coming from Nyquist in terms of the underlying stats, but he is obviously really benefiting from playing alongside the Stars there, playing alongside Forsberg, playing alongside Josi on that top power play a lot, on the top line a lot there with Ryan O'Reilly as well. So that's where Nyquist has been able to make his hay this season. On the season, pacing for 21 goals, 67 points now. What would you take in terms of the over-under on that 67-point pace? Do you think he's going to keep this up, or do you think he's going to regress back some?
Under. All right, 67-point Nyquist. I mean, dang, that would be pretty darn nice. But I think, to me, the ice time is really where it's a bit concerning for me, right? Like, yeah, this is amazing, 8 points in 5 games, but 16 minutes, like, this is Matt Duchene territory. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not really, like, without the underlying metrics to back it up, it's just not something I feel confident in moving forward. Like, a 67-point Nyquist, I think, you know, 55 to 60-point Nyquist, like, he's had a great season. There's no question there. And he has chemistry with Ryan O'Reilly and Philip Forsberg. And if he can keep power play one, I think, you know, 55, 60 points, but 67? Oh, no, I don't think so. I'm just not high on this player. And to me as well, Nashville, like in weeks 23, 25, not a great playoff schedule, right? So this is a guy that's probably going to be on the bubble for you when it comes to crunch time. So definitely not a must hold, but you know, while he's cooking like this, he's absolutely rosterable. And I think it's that, it's really that power play one that's going to keep his floor up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree. He is towards the top end of most of these metrics, but I mean, like 13.8% shooting percentage, 67% IPP, 11.1% on ice shooting percentage. None of those like scream unsustainability. They're just more towards the top end of his career averages than anything else. I will say like the 75 Corsi 4 per 60 is a really good number from him, obviously benefiting, as I said, from playing with those top end players, but like he's got a 57% Corsi 4 percentage and a 58% scoring chance for percentage. So when he's on the ice, like the puck is definitely tilted in Nashville's favor. Again, it's up for debate how much of that he's really doing versus the guys he's playing with. Right. But the fact remains that when he's in this deployment, good things are happening for the Nashville Predators. So I definitely wouldn't say like I'm out on Nyquist for the rest of the season. But yeah, do keep in mind that he's not just all locked and loaded every single second for the rest of the season. Keep him in your lineup. It's a guy that I would consider moving on from, especially if he did ever come off that top line or top power play. Another guy that we should look at, Nazem Kadri. He's got 5 goals, 7 points in his last 5, skating about 18 and a half minutes a night. Kadri's been up there, like on the season, he's 40th in shots per 60, 47th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Even the on-ice numbers are pretty solid, which is not something you can say for a lot of Calgary players, 60th in Corsi, 4 per 60, and 87th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. Kadri's been on a bit of an island in terms of, obviously, the rest of the Calgary Flames and how their season has gone. They've had some stretches here and there, but they've definitely not had a great season. What's the take with Kadri moving forward here? Like, obviously, I don't think anyone's expecting, you know, a goal per game and 7 points every 5 games out of Kadri rest of season. But on the season now, like, it's a 71-point pace. Like, that's pretty high up there. And it does seem like he's kind of the guy who's making it happen versus anybody else. So what do you think about Kadri? Can we expect him to keep this up?
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes. Like I feel confident in, you know, a 65 to 70 point pace for Kadri, just because he's getting power play one for sure. But also the underlying metrics, right? Like I was just noticing that, and this happens quite a bit, but sometimes when these guys have like these hot streaks, like Kadri has 7 points in 5 games, the underlying metrics are worse than their overall season value. And then, you know, when they're not scoring, their metrics are amazing, right? Like we've talked about Kadri a few times where, you know, he's rocking the shots on goal per 60, rocking the scoring chances for, like right now he's 109th in the last 5 games in shots on goal per 60, and then 205th in individual scoring chances 4 per 60, which doesn't really indicate that we got a player on a hot streak here. So it's interesting to say the least, but I do think that Kadri is going to be one of the driving offensive pieces there on Calgary, because they don't have a lot, right? It's going to be Kadri. It's going to be Huberdeau. Like, I mean, who else? I don't even know. And plus Calgary's going to, you know, it's going to be a fire sale, I think, moving forward here. Like Noah Hanifin's going to move on. Who the hell knows who else? So I do think Kadri's going to be the man. He's getting the deployment. He's got power play one. That's where I'm at with that. I think 65, 70 points, reasonable.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I do like Kadri. I think honestly, like he could even have a couple more goals and I wouldn't be shocked. The on-ice shooting percentage, really, depending on what they do with the team, how motivated the team is towards the end of the season, that could hold him back a little bit. But I think it's pretty clear that Kadri's in for it this year. He's playing really well. So I do like the player. I do think he's going to be a valuable piece for us this season. Let's kick it over to Arizona, where in the absence of Clayton Keller, we've got Matias Michelli resurfacing, 2 goals, 7 points in his last 5, skating almost 20 minutes a night. Still not shooting a ton, but definitely better than he has been throughout most of the season. 153rd in shots per 60 there, 257th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, but the on-ice number is pretty solid, 53rd, Corsi 4 per 60, 64th scoring chances, 4 per 60. Michelli has like shown a lot of playmaking brilliance in flashes, but I mean, like at even strength, he's playing with Nick Bjugstad and Lawson Kraus, which, I mean, Kraus is an okay player, maybe like a second line player, probably more like a middle six guy on a good team. But Bjugstad, like, I don't think anybody's writing home about Nick Bjugstad's ability to put the puck in the net. So Matthias Michelli, insofar as he's a member of the top power play right now, has some interest for me. But with Clayton Keller's return looming, I just don't feel super confident in continuing to roster him. Now, Arizona does have a strong schedule this week. They play Tuesday, Thursday, and then finish up with the Friday, Sunday off nights this week. So you get four games plus a couple of off nights towards the back end of the week. So that could be a reason to hang on to Michelli if you have picked him up for this hot streak. Where are you at on Michelli? Do you see anything positive moving forward, or would you be ready to kick him to the curb as soon as Keller's back?
Yeah, I think I would. I wouldn't just kick him to the curb if Keller comes back or when he comes back, but you're going to have to assess that. But this has been an interesting player this year. I mean, we talked about it a little bit recently. Like, there was a point in the season, like, where he was popping off with his shots a goal per 60. Like, he changed his game, or he just, you know, had a different priority out there. But he's kind of reverted back to this, you know, playmaker kind of model that he is. But I love the deployments, and, you know, the power play one is really good. So as long as he has that, I feel at least confident rostering him, right? He's not a must roster by any means. But again, when Keller comes back, we'll have to see what happens with that power play. But isn't it weird? Arizona, like, the week they had, you know, four games with four off nights, they did nothing. Like, guys like Michelli, nothing. And then now, of course, like, they're popping off, right? So, and winning games. They've won a couple games, of course, with Carol Vemelka, vegetable lasagna in the net just after I picked up Connor Ingram. So, I don't know what's going on. But, yeah, Michelli is a decent piece there. I feel like Arizona has a bunch of players that are all kind of similar. You know what I mean? At least in terms of fantasy production. I'd like to see someone separate themselves a little bit. I know Dylan Genther had a nice game today. I think he had a goal and two assists or something like that. So, I don't know. Who would you take? Would you take Michelli or Genther moving forward, just with Keller out?
Yeah, I mean, I would take Genther. He did get up to 18 minutes in this game here today, so he did get a little bit more play, which I think he's deserved on the basis of strong play the last few games. Mm-hmm. He had five shots, three hits to go along with that goal and two assists, so it was a good night for Genther for sure. So yeah, I think I'd still take Schmaltz over Genther just because the role is so much more assured. But yeah, Genther definitely playing himself into more of a role, it does seem like, and I do kind of feel pretty strongly about Genther next season. Michelli, nice. I tend to agree. It's really hard to trust him. I would want to see where he slots in with Keller coming back, but I tend to think that it really, the role that Michelli's been playing on that power play especially, is Keller's role. Just be the guy with the puck and distribute, make it happen. And he's been able to do that, to his credit, which is a good thing, and a good thing to file away for any future point at which Keller might be injured. But when Keller comes back, I think the most likely scenario is that Michelli just kind of drifts back into irrelevance for fantasy purposes. All right, let's move on. We definitely have to talk about Tyson Forster. This guy's got 6 goals, 7 points in his last 5 games here, averaging over 19 minutes a night. Torts absolutely loves this guy. Hangs up a poster of him over top of his bed every night, so I've heard. 72nd in shots per 60, 95th in individual scoring chances for per 60 over this last 5-game stretch. What are we at? Where are you at personally right now with Forster? Like, do you think this is just another hot stretch? Like, it's hard to get excited. You've heard me talk about Atkinson. You've heard me talk about Couturier. And it does seem like every time I get a little bit excited and think, oh, maybe, you know, Torts does actually like this guy, then he just comes back in with the chop and he takes their picture down from over top as well. Yeah. And finds a new guy. So talk to me about your thoughts on Forster. Obviously a terrific stretch and some decent underlying numbers to back it up, but are you realistically thinking that Forster could be a rest of season hold?
I'd need to see more, right? This is a great stretch, but like Torts is, he's of the mind, like, never let him know your next move, right? That's where he's at. He's like, okay, yeah, we're going to feed this guy 20 minutes a night. How about 11 minutes? Boom, out there. Yeah, how about a healthy scratch next game? You know, that's in the wheelhouse for these type of players, right? If they, you know, like, who did he do that to recently? I can't think of the guy's name, like Sell or something like that. Mm-hmm. Bobby Brink and Like Sell, they did something stupid and Torts comes out. He's like, these guys, that was pure stupidity. They're not playing the rest of the game. It's like that's the kind of coach that he is. So that always gives me pause. And truthfully, like, I haven't been in on a lot of Philadelphia Flyers this year. I know they're having a great season, just in terms of their overall record and overachieving in a lot of ways, but I mean, none of these guys, the torts factor really kind of affects it, right? But right now with Tyson Forster, yeah, I think he's a great streamer. If Philly has a good schedule, like get this guy in. He's getting decent power play time with Tippett, Frost, and Farabee. That's sort of the power play they were running there. And the big boy, Igor Zamula. Yeah, that's how you get a third worst power play in the entire league. Right there, you put Igor Zamula on the back end. but I mean, it's a nice little player. And I do think that Torts is going to do kind of something similar to what he did last year, which is really feature the young players on Philly towards the end of the season. I could see that happening where Tyson Forster, because if he is Torts' kind of player, like I could see him carrying on with these minutes. And if he gets these minutes, I could see him carrying on a reasonable level of production. So yeah, it's an interesting player to watch. Definitely can roster him while he's doing this type of stuff.
Yeah, I tend to agree there. Like as long as he's getting this kind of usage, I have no problem hanging on to him. Philadelphia this week, they do play on Monday and then they play Thursday, Saturday, heavy night. So it might be a little bit tougher to hang on to him through there. They play Florida and Tampa on those heavy nights. So it might be a little tougher to hang on to him through there. But I mean, it's also a little bit hard to go against what he's been able to do. Yeah. I do think like the underlying metrics have been solid. Really, when he's gotten the opportunity, I've noticed that the underlying metrics have come up along with the opportunity. And when he's been forced down the lineup to play with inferior players, that's when the metrics have kind of dived as well. So maybe it's not necessarily a guy who's a terrific generator, but I do remember that part of Forster's kind of scouting report when he first came into the league, when he was being drafted, was, you know, he's kind of one of these guys who can set up and he can get the shot off, but he might need that set of guys. So that would make some sense to me as well. I do have some love for Forster. I think he might actually kind of slot in similarly to Dylan Genther in that way when I'm looking ahead to next year, where I'm like, I want to see what they're going to use this guy for next year. I want to see what his role is going to be, because there could be some upside there. Could be one of those guys you want to jump on early next year, and he might actually end up being a long-term hold for you. So just something to file away on those two. Another guy that I would be considering in a similar light is Shane Pinto, who's got 2 goals, 6 points in his last 5. Guy that we shouted out as looking good under the hood last week, and he's been absolutely lights out since. Just under 18 minutes a game in this 5-game stretch, 20th in shots per 60, 36th individual scoring chances for per 60, 18th Corsi 4 per 60, 26th scoring chances 4 per 60. He's now on a 27-goal, 73-point pace in the 18 games that he's played. So definitely a small sample size alert there on those numbers, but really, really strong stuff from Pinto. I mean, yeah, 18 games through these 18 games, if you include him in the sample size, he's 9th in the league in individual scoring chances 4 per 60. So really hard to say anything other than Pinto's been terrific when he has played this year. Now you got Josh Norris out. You got a little bit of runway here for Shane Pinto. How excited should we be about Pinto? Do you think this 73-point pace has a chance to hold rest of the season?
You know, you should probably be about as excited as, you know, when you go to a restaurant and you order pico de gallo, some tortillas, and the Pinto bean. Oh, yeah, buddy. I'm all over the Pinto bean. I love this player. I think, first off, must roster player to me. You know, he's 26% rostered. What the hell are we doing? This makes no sense. You got to add Pinto and do it now. But it's weird looking at his metrics here, like especially over the last 5 games, looks like he could do even more. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, last 5 games, he's 20th overall in shots to goal per 60, but he's only has 11.1 shooting percentage and an 8.7 on ice shooting percentage. Like that's low. Like he could, you know, he could do more, right? He could score more goals. Like Ottawa's obviously it's been rough times there, but I mean, Pinto's floor is rock solid with Josh Norris out. And obviously we got to see what happens with Brady Tkachuk here. It looks like Pinto is playing really well. Batherson is playing really well for the Senators. And I think Pinto is going to be a rest of season hold. No question in my mind. But hopefully, especially if he stays on power play one, right? Because Ottawa does get a ton of power play time and he's on there. So I do expect, I don't know, this pace here. Like, it is a small sample size. So what is it? What did you say? 73? That seems a little spicy. I mean, 60-point Pinto to me, maybe 55, 60-point Pinto pace rest of the season. I'd be absolutely happy with that, especially with these metrics underlying here.
Yeah, I mean, if the metrics keep up, I think he's got a chance to do the 73-point pace. The real question is whether he can sustain this level of production, whether he can sustain the spot in the lineup. Does Tkachuk stay healthy? Can he stay on a line with Tkachuk? Because obviously Tkachuk is a big-time shot and chance producer. So all that will be factors for Pinto. But regardless, it's really nice to see the underlying numbers here. And until the underlying numbers start to fade away, I will have a ton of interest in continuing to hold Shane Pinto. All right, I want to talk about a few defensemen before we switch over to the have-nots. Let's talk about Josh Morrissey real quick. In the five games before the game tonight, which he scored a goal and an assist in, much to the chagrin of my Kekuffel team, who is facing him in my matchup this week, he had 11 assists in the five games prior to the game here tonight, averaging just under 24 minutes a night. Not really doing terrific in terms of generating a ton of shot attempts, but he is 39th still in shots per 60, which is passing marks, 64th in Corsi 4 per 60, 27th in scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season, 10 goals, 68-point pace. Where are you at with Josh Morrissey? Has he kind of climbed back into that more or less top tier of defensemen? Maybe, you know, not right there up with Makar and them, but like one tier back of that. Is that where Morrissey sits for you?
Yeah, I love this. I mean, it's a player that I expected a regression from, like definitely coming into the season. And it looked like that was going to be the way. But yeah, lo and behold, 11 assists in five games. My goodness. You know, the Jets are really riding him. Giggity. And he's obviously bonuses guy. Like he loves him out there. He gives him a ton of minutes. So I think especially after this last little bit, I feel absolutely confident that this is, you know, while he's playing for bonus, this is going to be what we can expect from Morrissey, right? Like a 68-point pace. I love that. You know, so I don't really have too much to say, but I know like the Jets have been a great team this year, and Morrissey's been a big factor there. So yeah, I don't really have too much to say. Seven goal. What is this pace? 10 goal pace. That's not bad. So yeah, where are you at with Morrissey?
Yeah, I think realistically the reason that everybody was projecting regression for Morrissey was because last season was something that we'd never seen from him. He had played a lot of games in the NHL, but with the context of this added season, like the time on ice is almost identical. The shots per 60 is actually up a little bit this year, so he's improved on that. The IPP was a huge thing last year at 58%, which is just sky high for a defenseman. This year he's right back there, 54%, so maybe like he is just kind of that dude now. Yeah, the individual scoring chances 4 per 60, right in line with last year. Even the on-ice stats, pretty much identical to last year in a lot of ways. The on-ice shooting percentage actually a little bit down from last year, but still not much. Like maybe just some healthy regression there, just kind of bringing him back in line. But still it results in a 68-point pace, so you can't say you're too mad, right? So overall, I do kind of feel like this is probably who Morrissey is. Like somewhere in the 10 to 12 goal, 65-ish point range is probably my new baseline for Morrissey moving forward. It is really rare, I will say. Like, I don't know that we were wrong to expect regression from Morrissey, because it is so rare to see a defenseman. Like, what did he play? Had he played? He had played something like 300 games prior to last season when he had the big breakout. So for a guy to play 300 games, then just have a massive, massive breakout to that level and then sustain it the next year right away, I don't know that we were totally wrong to expect some regression there. But yeah, I guess lesson learned, and kudos to Josh Morrissey. He is absolutely doing the thing, and now it's starting to look like a new baseline rather than, you know, a guy who we should continue to expect to regress moving forward. Lastly here, I want to talk about a couple of defensemen. We can do a little compare and contrast as we do. We got Shane Gostisbehere and Travis Sanheim, who have identical 2-goal, 5-point stretches in their last five games. Gostisbehere plays a little less, just over 19 minutes. Sanheim a little more, just under 22 minutes. But Gostisbehere definitely has the better rate stats, 11th in shots per 60 and 63rd in Corsi 4 per 60 to 99th in shots per 60 for Sanheim and 157th in Corsi 4 per 60 for Sanheim. On the season, Gostisbehere is pacing for 12 goals, 53 points. Sanheim for 11 goals, 48 points. Rest of season, you got a favorite here. I think Sanheim has been picking up some steam. I've heard some people adding him back and talking about dropping people like Gostisbehere for Sanheim. Are you particularly swayed to one player over another here?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't have either player, and I haven't all season. Just because for Goss Despair, it's the deployment, obviously, right? Like, yeah, he's a great offensive player with awesome metrics and a decent point pace. Like you said, 53 points. But I mean, you know, 18 to 20 minutes a night, that's not really what I want to see from a roster player that I've got there. And then Sanheim, yeah, he had a great start this year and sort of fell off. I remember, you know, a report coming out at some point towards just saying like he played him too much, you know, and like he was kind of backing him off a bit and putting other guys in there. So, but he's shown like he can do a lot of stuff, right? So, I mean, I think it depends on your format too. If you're in a bangers league or with heavy banger waiting, like Sanheim's your obvious option. He's getting way better deployment, even though he doesn't play the power play very much. But Goss Despair will probably get more points, right? And he's, you know, he's getting that power play time. And yeah, Detroit has some, to me, better offensive weapons to play with Goss Despair. So I think if I had to in a bubble, I'd probably go Goss Despair because I like points. But I mean, it's fairly close. I don't know, where are you at with these guys?
Yeah, I think I'd take Goss Despair over Sanheim. Definitely. Sanheim has the edge in terms of like bangers, cats, hits, blocks. If that's your format, then maybe you prefer Sanheim just for that fact alone. But I do think that, yeah, Goss Despair seems to be a little bit more locked into a power play role there and kind of being that specialist. Not going to get a ton of even strength time, but definitely going to get lots of power play time. The IPP is high there for both of these guys, 56% for Goss Despair, 53% for Sanheim, but I tend to believe it a lot more for Goss Despair also just because the greater percentage of his time is coming on the power play where you might expect him to have higher efficiencies. So overall, I will take Goss Despair in points, but I could see the argument for Sanheim in a banger's cats. All right, before we move over to have-nots, I got to take a second. I got to plug the Apples and Geos Discord server. Almost 1,100 managers in there talking fantasy hockey all day, every day. So get yourself in there. Join the conversation. People will love to give you their opinions on what you should be doing with your fantasy team. And I'm in there too. Blake's in there as well. We're all giving advice, talking to people all the time. If you need some more personalized advice, you can join the Apples and Geos Patreon. $5 a month. I will answer all of your questions if you post them in the patron only Discord section, and I'll make sure I get to all those, answer all your questions, get you set up. For $10 a month, you can get a monthly team review. I had some people join this past week and get a quick team review in, you know, gearing up for playoffs. It's go time, right? So if that's something that you need in your life, $10 a month, get yourself a team review, get yourself set up. We can definitely do that for you. If you need some daily summaries on events around the NHL, the stats that really matter, I'd encourage you to go to applesandgenos.com every day and check out Mark Barber at 18skaters on Twitter. He's posting these daily summaries on the Apples and Geos website, and it's just a terrific way to get up to date, get up to speed real quick on what's happening across the National Hockey League and especially on the metrics that matter for fantasy. And lastly, if you are enjoying what you're hearing, if you're on YouTube, throw us a like and subscribe. If you're listening on audio, rating, review, whatever your podcast provider allows, we would love to get some more reviews in before the end of the season. Everybody's been very generous with doing that for us this year, so thank you very much, and let's finish strong. Speaking of finishing strong, let's get into the have-nots. Blake, let's talk about Jake DeBrusque. I think this is a little bit interesting because I have had some conversations with some patrons, actually, about who they should be picking up from Boston. Boston's got this Monday-Tuesday back-to-back to start the week, so they got that little bit of a nice schedule to open the week, especially if you can obviously get them in for the Tuesday 9-game slate. Then you've got yourself a little bit of a head start to the week. You got Jake DeBrusque here, who has 0 points in his last 5 games. That doesn't feel too good, but 47th in the league in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, and skating 17 minutes a night. He's beginning some top power play run. Where are you at on Jake DeBrusque? Obviously a player that we had some interest in at the beginning of the season. He had some really good underlying numbers. I remember us talking about how his underlying numbers, his on-ice numbers, were actually better than anybody, better than Patrice Bergeron, better than Brad Marchand, better than David Pastrnak, best on the team. And so that really hasn't come to fruition this year. 18-goal, 37-point pace for DeBrusque. But with the underlying stats coming up a little bit here and getting some decent deployment, are you back in on DeBrusque, at least for a couple-game stream here, and see where it goes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a guy you would want to take a flyer on, right? For two games, because it's a streamer with benefits, right? He's playing in the top six in Boston and he's playing on the top power play currently. And Pavel Zacha is day to day with an injury, right? So it just means more touches to go around for guys like Jake DeBrusk. And I think that, with that power play one deployment in particular, that's what's really kind of getting me excited. His metrics, yeah, just this season just hasn't really popped off the way that we sort of thought that he would, or I thought that he would. I just thought there's going to be a lot more opportunity for him with guys like Bergeron and Krejci out of the lineup. I thought DeBrusk would really kind of, ride, but that just hasn't been the case. But, we that's why we separate seasons into little chunks, right? Like, we got another 20 game chunk here. Like I think DeBrusk can do some things here. Right. And like you said, that 47th overall in individual scoring chances, 4 for 60 over the last five, those are going to start going in, right? He's going to start converting on that. So yeah, I think Monday, Tuesday, Jake DeBrusk, that's a really smart play in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm pretty in on DeBrusk whenever this starts to pop back up and his name starts to come back up on the top power play. I'm just willing to give guys like this a shot. Mm-hmm. They've shown some production in the past. They've shown the propensity to get hot. Maybe he is just one of these guys who's streaky. Maybe that's just who he is in the National Hockey League. I'm okay with streaky when it's on my team and he's rolling at playoff time. I'd be pretty okay with that. So
yeah,
I'm definitely interested in DeBrusk for a couple game stream this week and just kind of see where it goes from there. Another guy who's been, I don't even know if you can call him streaky. He's just been kind of bad this year. Pierre-Luc Dubois, just one assist his last five games, averaging 16 minutes a night in the last few games here. That's been down even more, 13.04 and 13.23 the last two games. He has still gotten on the top power play, curiously enough, with Fiala, Kopitar, Byfield. Obviously, Kempe out with the injury opens up that spot. Exactly the same, actually, as Jake DeBrusk. 18 goal, 37 point pace for Dubois on the season. Do you have any hope for Dubois? Is this the kiss of death? Are you holding out any hope rest of season, or are you just closing the door and you never want to think about it again?
I wish I could. But yeah, like to me, 37 point pace, my God, this is a disastrous first season for PLD in LA. It just has not gone the way that they expected. And again, this is a really telling sign with Kempe out right now. This guy's only getting 13 minutes time on ice. I mean, I know they don't play the same position, but like there should be more opportunity for a guy like PLD to be out there, right? Especially with his contract. But he's a good streamer for LA if you're looking for an LA player. But I mean, I wouldn't get your hopes up too much. Like, look at these metrics. They're terrible on the season. Like, on the season, he's 256 overall in shots to goal per 60. That show ain't no good. All right. We need more than that. And that's a big difference from what he did last season, right? Like even just regular shots per game. Last season, he was 2.8. This season, 1.9, right? That's not going to cut it, PLD. So yeah, I'm not really big on this player moving forward. He's good in a bangers league, I guess, but he's not even really doing that very well this year. So I don't know. That said too, he's locked into term. He's got a big contract. I could see them finding a spot for him next season, like on the Kings, and giving him a bit more minutes, like trying to work him into the lineup, right, with the new coach there. So maybe he's a player that we look at in the late rounds next season. But yeah, PLD is kind of cooked this season, isn't he?
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Definitely, like, he's got a 7.5% on ice shooting percentage. That's not helping, but he's kind of played himself into that spot where he's been down the lineup and playing with inferior players. So, like, it's kind of his own fault a little bit as well, in my opinion. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to ever write off any player for the rest of the season and just say I'll never look at them again. If the metrics turn around and he starts to play terrific, I would pick him up again. I'm totally,
absolutely.
I will never, just get so angry at a player, at a name on a screen, that I'll never pick them up for fantasy ever again. I don't think that's a wise play.
You don't have any players like that, Nate? Do you have anybody?
No, I don't. Casey Mittelstadt might come close, but no.
Oh my God. All right. That's fine. All right. Shout out to Casey
Mittelstadt. You've seen me pick up Casey Mittelstadt.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I screenshotted it. So it's
yeah.
There's proof.
All right, let's talk about Evander Kane. I just checked over to make sure he has not gotten in on any of these points. 3 goals for the Edmonton Oilers in the game so far. He's not gotten in on any of that in 5 games prior. No points in any of those games either. Under 16 minutes a night through that 5-game stretch. But 12th in shots per 60, 6th in shot attempts per 60, 35th in individual scoring chances for per 60. Like, Kane is still firing, just not going in. Edmonton has a good playoff schedule. Where are you at with Evander Kane?
You got to take a gander at Evander. You got to. All right. But I mean, obviously, this is not the season that we hoped for. I really thought that Evander Kane would be kind of a 30 and 30 guy this year. I thought that. Yeah, he would get prioritized a little bit more, and it's weird. Like, he just hasn't, like, his shooting percentage right in line. Like, it just, he hasn't been shooting as much on the season. Like, his metrics haven't been as good as they are right now all season. Right. And they were elite last season. So that really kind of got me thinking that he might just be percolating ready to pop, but it really wasn't the case, unfortunately. But you know, he's still doing the thing. This guy is he's a Cats League legend. Obviously, you want this guy in here. Shots and hits and PIMs, all that. And yeah, great playoff schedule. You're obviously rostering Evander Kane and just hoping he does some stuff. But, you know, without any access to the power play, that's going to keep him down a little bit, right? And there's no way he's getting on the power play. Although, yeah, when a player goes down, he does go up. But these guys are obviously all healthy, especially when they're playing my team in Kickupful and they're smashing me currently. God, Zach Hyman has 2 goals, Nate. What is this? Why is Zach Hyman doing this to me? I like Zach Hyman. All right. But the matchup's a lot closer than anyways. With Evander Kane, yeah, I think this is just a little cold stretch for him, but he's gonna start putting some points on the board. And you know, his floor is solid because of the other things that he brings too. So
yeah, I tend to agree with all of that. Let's move on. Let's talk some Mika Zibanejad, player that I traded to you, Blake, in the Experts League.
You son of a...
Yeah, it happens. 1 goal in his last 5. He's skating 23 minutes a night, so he's definitely not wanting for opportunity. 263rd in shots per 60, 322nd in individual scoring chances for per 60, 121 in Corsi 4 per 60, 76th in scoring chances for per 60 in this 5-game stretch. It's just a 26-goal, 74-point pace on the season. That's not great numbers for a guy of Zibanejad's caliber. Where are you at now with Zibanejad? I know last time we had talked about Zibanejad, I think it was maybe a couple weeks ago now, you'd said that you're still pretty high on Zibanejad, willing to pick him up, trade for him. Obviously, you did trade for him in at least one spot. So where are you at now with Zibanejad? Is this recent stretch of play moving the needle for you? Do you think it'll go away? Where are you at now?
I mean, I'm not as confident, obviously, right? Like, when you go through a little stretch like this and with these underlying metrics, that's not good. But I saw a report, the head coach there, Laviolette, was talking about his line, Zibanejad and Kreider, just that they're working out the kinks, basically. Like, he's going to keep putting them out there. He's not going to change them up. They're doing good work. Like, it's going to come. But it is hard. It's hard to pinpoint. I think, I remember I listened to your Puzzling Players. You were talking about Zibanejad and talking about how maybe it's age related decline, or that was one of the things that you maybe said. And I don't think that's the case, but I do think that the new coach has made a huge difference in Zibanejad's play, to a level that I don't quite understand as, you know, kind of an average like hockey fan, right? Fantasy analyst here. But like, his shots are way down, his power play points are way down, goals especially, right? Like, I don't know. I can't put my finger on what's going on with Zibanejad here, but he's in a good spot with New York because they're obviously still winning. Like, they're, you know, Panarin's playing amazing. They're getting the job done. So if you're going to be in a cold streak right now, this is a great time to do it, right? Work out the kinks. You're still getting wins with not a lot of pressure on you, right? So I'd rather him do this now and then, you know, head into the playoffs, get, you know, popping off. But 74 point pace, especially with what I've seen lately, like, I could see Zibanejad finishing the season with 75 points. That seems like a reasonable expectation for Zibanejad. Obviously, you know, he'd have to start shooting a lot more and getting more chances for that to have any chance of going up, right? But it just hasn't been that kind of season for Zibby, has it?
No, it definitely hasn't. I mean, in terms of the IPP, it's way down off his normal marks here, so that's definitely contributing. But what's most concerning to me is like this is a 60-game sample now. He's at 7.4 shots per 60. Last year, he's at 9.2. That's a huge, huge drop off. And the individual scoring chances for per 60 is an even bigger drop off from 8.4 to 6.0. So that's really concerning to me with Sabanajad. You can theorize why it's happening. It is happening. So the opportunity is still there, almost identical minutes, average time on ice to last year. The on-ice stats are not that much changed. And really, he's been floating even to this level with a much higher on-ice shooting percentage than he had last year. So, yeah, I mean, you wash it all out, and I don't know that I can reasonably project him for any more than what he's done so far. Maybe he gets a little bit luckier with the IPP, but maybe he gets a little unluckier with the on-ice shooting percentage. Both of those things could happen. Overall, I'm just uninspired with Sabanajad's
Yeah,
season, and
it's
it'll
a
be
good word.
tough. Yeah, it'll be a tough look for next season. I mean, if you have Sabanajad at this point in the year, like you're not doing anything with him, right? Like you're not gonna just drop him or anything. He's still useful. He's just definitely not what you thought you were getting, which is pretty disappointing. So for next year, I don't know exactly what I'm gonna do with him, where I'm gonna rank him. Definitely, he's not gonna be going nearly as high in fantasy drafts next year, but it'll be an interesting conversation at least for next year. Was this year just an aberration? He'll bounce all the way back, or is this just a trend and more of a new level that he's setting for himself? Be an interesting discussion to have for sure. All right, a couple of players that I'd like to do a little bit of a compare and contrast here. Brad Marchand and Matt Duchene both have just 1 point in their last five. Obviously, Duchene's had an unreal year and one that we thought would regress and kept thinking would regress and has just never regressed. Brad Marchand's seems to be a bit of an ageless wonder and what he's been able to put out there this year. Marchand on pace for 34 goals, 70 points. You got Matt Duchene on pace for 31 goals, 75 points. Marchand definitely getting more ice time, but Duchene obviously being far more efficient with his ice time. Where are you at between these two? Do you like both to rebound from this current cold stretch for both, or what do you think is going to happen most likely moving forward?
Well, give me Marchand all day. I mean, I think everybody who listens to the Apples and Genos podcast knows how I feel about Duchene. Oh God, it was Duchene. We found out, everybody. But yeah, I have much more confidence that Brad Marchand, even at his age, 35, like that he's on a 70-point pace. I think that's absolutely reasonable. Maybe even more. Like 75 is probably where Marchand will finish the season. He's getting great ice time. It's to me, that's the big issue with Duchene, right? Like his is built on massive efficiency, and not that much ice time, right? And he's not even getting power play one. Right, he's just doing the thing. So I am sort of still waiting for Matt Duchene to fall off a little bit, and he has, right? 0 points in the last three games. Like I still think that a regression is coming for Duchene. I would be surprised if he finishes the season at 75. I'm seeing Duchene as more, even with what he's done here, I can see like more of a 65-point season for Duchene, whereas I think Marchand will probably finish around 75.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. Like, if you look at Marchand's underlying numbers and kind of comparing to his previous seasons, you don't see a huge drop off. Definitely, the on ice numbers have dropped off, as you might expect. No Patrice Bergeron in town, obviously, been a running mate of Marchand's for many, many years. But overall, Marchand has been able to really sustain what he's doing personally, and his shooting percentage has come back up over the last couple of years. It had dropped down a little bit from the normal, like 15 plus percent shooting percentage that he'd been able to do. Now, this year, he's back up to 15.7. I don't know, maybe we shouldn't expect that to continue, but the fact that he has done it for many, many seasons prior in his career kind of makes me think that, it's at least possible that he can sustain this rest of season. The on-ice shooting percentage is probably a touch high, just given the rest of the talent there in Boston has dropped off a little bit relative to previous years. So maybe that comes down a little bit, but it's hard to bet against him for sure, especially considering that he's going to get all the minutes moving forward. Duchene, yeah, I agree. Like the the bet that you want to make here is not on someone to just continue at a really high level of efficiency, right? It's just so hard to do that in the National Hockey League for a full season. It's far more likely that regardless of whether they've done it before or not, that they're just likely to regress from a really high efficiency standard. And in particular, the 14%+ on ice shooting percentage really stands out for a guy who's not even getting top power play time. So I would take Marchand over Duchesne as well. All right, a couple defensemen to look at here. We got Darnell Nurse, we got Aaron Ekblad, we got, actually, I want to throw in Thomas Harley as well into this mix. So let's do a little ranking again here, Blake. Let's talk through these guys. All of them playing big minutes, 22+ minutes a night. Ekblad has been a real disappointment this year, as has Nurse. Both kind of in that mold where, you know, they're not on top power plays or anything, but they are getting lots of minutes. The team that they play on scores a ton. And then you got the new newcomer Thomas Harley, who's been wildly efficient, has really come on in a big way over the back half of the season, stepped up huge when Heiskanen was out, got a lot of his points there. But even on the season, like 60 games in, 12th amongst all defensemen, individual scoring chances, 4/60, that's indicative to me of a player who's jumping up into the play a lot and being efficient with those chances as well. So rest of season, Darnell Nurse, Aaron Ekblad, Thomas Harley, and let's go with a couple points. The format, who you got?
Give me Harley at number one. I think I'll ride with Harley for the rest of the season. I know we talked about Chris Tanev going to Dallas and how that may affect Harley's fantasy value moving forward, but I think this guy's shown out more than enough. Like, just elite goal scoring from the back end, from a young player too. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he's able to keep his minutes up when Tanev gets in the lineup there. After that, oh God, I think I'd probably go Ekblad. The only reason is there's a chance in hell that he might get on the power play at some point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whereas Darnell Nurse, and it's funny, Darnell Nurse actually has, in the last five games, has the best shots on goal per 60 out of these three. But I don't know. I've seen what I need to see from Darnell Nurse. Like, he has a role on that team and he fills that role, right? Obviously, in a Bangers Cats League, I think I'd probably reverse it. You know, I'd probably go Nurse, Ekblad, and Harley, right? But I think, yeah, in a couple scoring, I'm taking Harley, Ekblad, Nurse. What say you, Nate?
Yeah, I don't mind that. It's hard to argue with how well Harley's been playing. I have some concern that, yeah, he might not be relied on quite so much with Tanev in town. His minutes might take a dip as a result, but he's been so efficient. And Dallas is kind of just in a really efficient team. So you kind of think that that might continue. I do think that Ekblad probably deserves better than what he's been getting so far in terms of points, but he's still got a long way to go to catch up with Harley's paces on the season. So I do think you're right to go Harley, Ekblad, Nurse there. And I would agree, obviously, in Bangers Cats, you might fully reverse it, although I might still take Harley over Ekblad, to be completely honest with you. It's hard. It's really hard for somebody who looks at the numbers as much as I do to not just be completely in love with what Thomas Harley's been able to do this season. All right, last one here, coming to my hometown, Toronto Maple Leafs. Morgan Riley just one assist in his five games here. Still got 16th in the league in shots for 60. Obviously, the on-ice numbers are always going to be good attached to that Toronto offense. 15th in Corsi 4/60, 19th in scoring chances 4/60. On the season, pacing for 11 goals, 66 points. Do you think that maybe this is just some normal regression that we probably should have expected for Riley to hit at some point? Rest of season, do you view him as 60-point player, 65-point player, higher, lower? Where are you at with Riley?
That's a good question. I feel pretty confident in Morgan Riley, especially because he's attached to that power play, right? Like, that keeps his floor rock solid. I mean, he's on a 66-point pace. I think, you know, 55, 60 points is probably where Riley is going to lie this season. And I think that's more than enough, right? Like, that, I don't know where Riley was drafted in draft season, but I feel like it was at massive value, right? For a guy that, I guess at the beginning of the season, we knew that the Klingon, John Klingberg, was going to be taking power play one. So Riley was gotten at value. But I mean, when you drafted him, and if you were told he's going to get 66 points or 60 points, you've been like, yeah, bang, book it. Give me that. So, I mean, I think it's just managing expectations on defensemen, right? Like, a 60-point defenseman, that's very valuable. And that's a great season for a defenseman. And that's what Riley's cooking for right now. And I feel like, yeah, again, with his power play time, I don't see any problem whatsoever. And obviously the way Toronto's been playing lately too, like that bodes well for his future.
For sure. I pretty much agree across the board. I think Riley's just the guy there. I don't really see them going out and adding, you know, like, I don't know. I don't even know somebody off the top of my head who'd be like a power play specialist kind of player. I don't think that's the type of defenseman they're in the market for even. Realistically, I think they're looking for more beef on the back end, if anything, moving forward. So I feel like Riley's role is pretty secure, and I would just kind of be content rolling him out and kind of expecting something similar, at least maybe low end 60 points, high end more towards the top end 68, 69 points, which would be pretty nice. But I think pretty much what we got here from Riley as the season long point paces and goal paces is what we should expect moving forward. All right, well, if we didn't get to a player that you wanted to hear about, make sure to join me for the Puzzling Players live stream. It goes live every Monday at 8 p.m. EST. If you want to get your player in to be talked about, you got to join the Apples and Geos Discord server, as I mentioned. Keep an eye out for me when I put out the call to everyone to get their Puzzling Players in. Everybody gives a thumbs up to the players they want to hear about the most, and we kind of go off that list. Players that people want to hear about the most get talked about on the stream. You can join the stream. You can ask questions live on YouTube. And I generally have a chance to get to most of those questions. So definitely you can go that route as well. But yeah, make sure you join me Monday, 8 p.m. EST every week to talk some Puzzling Players. Now we got to go under the hood. We got to talk about Wyatt Johnston. Last 10 games, yeah, 18.02 average time on ice. They've really started to lean on him a little bit more. And this is on Dallas, where they really haven't leaned on anybody much to this extent, really, at any point in the season. Jason Robertson has been up there, but even Rupe Hintz's minutes have been cut. Pavelski's minutes have been cut. But yeah, for a 10-game stretch for Johnston to get up there and get into this level of 18 minutes a night is a really good sign for him moving forward. He's become, yeah, it feels like a bit of a utility piece for them in some ways. Kind of can be placed anywhere in the lineup, and he's going to produce in this 10-game stretch. 12.3 shots per 60, really good stuff. 16th in the league, and that span 14.96 individual scoring chances for per 60, which is 6th in the league over that 10-game stretch. 67th in Corsi 4 per 60, and 24th in this on-ice scoring chances for per 60. I want to highlight here, too, 60% Corsi 4 percentage, 68.5% on-ice scoring chance for percentage. So when he's on the ice, the puck is definitely headed in the right direction. Wyatt Johnston, absolutely proven he can be a guy to tilt the ice. And yeah, I'm going to double down on it. I said it once before, kind of in passing, kind of as a joke. I'm going to say it with my full chest this time. Wyatt Johnston, your 2024-25 Dallas Stars points leader. Any thoughts, Blake?
Oh my, that's a spicy nugget right there. I don't know about that, buddy, but this is a guy that we're going to be drafting next year for sure.
For sure.
Like there's no question to me, like look at these 2 years he's had, like played a full 82 last year with 41 points. That was a nice season. And I remember you talking about him last season as a player you were interested in. Well, yeah, this year, I mean, he's not, you know, blowing the doors down, but like, you know, now he's on a 56 point pace. And I mean, the Dallas Stars have some, you know, they have a lot of veterans, right? Guys that they probably need to be moved down the lineup to give guys like Wyatt Johnston a chance. So I think once Wyatt Johnston is able to get on power play one consistently, like we're going to see blast off time. I think this is a really special player that took me a little while to sort of get onto, but I like what I'm seeing, and I love that they're sort of prioritizing him moving forward. And Dallas has a really interesting team just in general going into the playoffs. They got three lines that can get it done, that they don't have any qualms about just evening out those three lines and popping them out there. And they have someone on each line that can do stuff. So I like Wyatt Johnston's rest of season value for sure. I think he's going to be a beauty.
Yeah. I mean, only 9 or 7 power play points rather on the season so far this year. Like if he was consistently top power play there, you'd have to imagine that goes north of 20. Like that's an instant huge upgrade in terms of the power play there. So that would go a long way. And don't forget, like this is a guy, he's only in his second season, very much on the ascent in terms of his overall career. So I'm very in on Wyatt Johnston. Would love to have him rest of season, and I think I'll be drafting him ahead of everybody else next year, no doubt in my mind. All right, we got to move over to move of the week. I'm going to lead us off here. I've got a confession to make. So today in this Kakuffle matchup that I've been bemoaning how tight it is and how I have to root against Crosby to score any points versus my Letang and Ekholm, quick update, 261.2 for me, 259.45 for the other guy. We got one more period here. Yeah, basically if Crosby scores a point versus my guy's not scoring a point, it's over for me. But if it just kind of peters out and nobody does anything, that would be a nice third period for me. So that's something I'm rooting for here. But the move that I made today, I had one more ad to make. I was looking to make a move. All the goalies that were potentially out there to be streamed were already gone. So I didn't have an option there in terms of goaltender to pick up, which would usually be my move. In most points leagues, your best case scenario from a goalie is a lot better than just praying for like a 3-goal or 3-point outburst from a random streamer that's still available. So right. A lot of times that's what I'll do on a Sunday. But there wasn't anybody available. Kakuffle 14 team league, obviously you get goalies rostered, people thinking the same thing. Tough to find those people at the last second. And I was going through and I was like, all right, Barrett Hayton. I was looking ahead to my schedule. He would work out with my schedule decently for next week. I can make it work. And he had a couple of 17-minute games. Seemed like he was coming up. And so I was like, okay, Barrett Hayton, here we go. I'm going to stream you in. And I clicked add, and I realized that it was past 1 p.m. EST, and their game had already started. So, yeah, don't be me. Don't be an idiot. Take a look, and don't be in a rush, and slow your thought processes down, and make sure that the player's game hasn't already started, and you can actually put them into the lineup. If I lose by 1 point, I think it was 1.5 points that he got in the game today. If I lose by that amount, I will be absolutely crushed. Because I am in contention for a bye here, and that's what I'm going for. Man. So, yeah, don't be me. Take things slow. And I also just wanted to say this because, like, yeah, definitely we're all human. Don't beat yourself up too much, right? Like, it is something that can happen. This is not the only mistake that I've made. Maybe it's the only mistake like this that I've made this year, but definitely many other times throughout the year where I've made some sort of similar mistake where immediately I've been like, why did I do that? So you have to think about things in the long term. Definitely everything's got a little bit more stake attached to it now that we're getting close to the fantasy playoffs. So take your time, slow things down, make sure that the player hasn't already started their game, and let's get some more dubs moving forward.
That's awesome, man. You're going to pull it out. Don't worry, buddy. But yeah, that's such a good point because I know how many times I'm literally, it's like 12:30 at night. I'm sitting on the pot and I'm just looking at my phone and then it's like, oh, I'll add so-and-so. And I was like, just take a second. No, stop. Like, let me, you know, I'll do that tomorrow or I'll look over here. Like, yeah, you need to take your time. So yeah, that's a really good kind of disclaimer for everybody. As far as my move of the week, I mean, there wasn't one move, right? This Kakuffle matchup that I'm bemoaning as well. It's really, really close now. Of course, my opponent has Fogle, McLovin Fogle, and he's got two assists tonight. It's just, yeah, it's crazy. I'm still projected to win by like 2 points. So that's nice. But I feel like I streamed my ass off this week. I did everything right. I dropped who I needed to drop. I got players in. Like I had no one on my bench, right? So I feel like I've extracted every bit of value in my Kakuffle league. And yeah, sometimes it just doesn't happen, you know? Like if I lose this one, this would be kind of indicative of the way my Kakuffle season has gone. Right. Like I'm getting so many points, but the guy I'm against is just getting a little bit more than me. Right. That's always been the way, but yeah, I don't know. I got nothing here, but I feel good about what I was able to do. I did grab Connor Ingram and drop Joey DeCord. That's maybe something I could talk about, but that didn't work out too well in this case because yeah, vegetable lasagna gets a bunch of starts. And meanwhile, Connor Ingram's having a Coke and a smile on the bench. Joey DeCord, what the hell? What have you done for me lately? They just kicked Joey DeCord to the curb, give it to Grubauer. I don't know. I'm a bit salty about that, but yeah, I feel like I did everything I could do and I might still lose. So that's kind of how it is, right? That's fantasy hockey.
That is fantasy hockey for you. Speaking of doing everything you can, but still losing, we have to recap the head-to-head streamer deathmatch. And as much as I love Wyatt Johnson, he did not pull it out for you this past week. He had 18.5 kickoffle points across his four games, three assists in those four games. But my Dylan Strome stream, one goal, four assists, 20 kickoffle points. That means it's 9-8 for Nate, for the good guys. No, moving on, we got Tyler Bertuzzi versus Sam Bennett this week. I'm feeling a little bit shaky after Bertuzzi did not have a great game on Saturday and John Tavares did. Could mean Tavares coming back up to the top power play, which would be a bit of a death knell for Bertuzzi. But I'm hanging tough with my guy, hanging tough with Tyler Bertuzzi this week versus your Sam Bennett. How are we feeling, Blake? You still got confidence you can pull this out against me?
Oh, big time, buddy. Just as I predicted, I knew Bertuzzi would have a bad game and go right down the lineup. JT back on the top. Just I had that right up here, buddy. You know, it's a gift.
It's something, all right. Well, yeah, that's all we that's all we got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value. Helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for this podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.